This is Nostradamus's quatrain about the execution of Charles I, the extraordinary quatrain in which he actually explicitly talks about the London Parliament putting their king to death.
The historian Juliet Gardner looks at how our vision of the future has changed over time.
It seems to me that a desire to look into the future for advice, for reassurance, or to warn of disaster or critique society has always been fundamental to human nature.
A History of the Future begins tomorrow afternoon at 2:15 over on BBC Radio 4.
It's just gone 10:15 and now on BBC Radio 3, World Roots with Lucy Duran.
Tonight on World Roots, I'll be reviewing new albums of world music with Paul Fisher and Sue Steward. First, though, music from our session artist, the Japanese koto player Fuyuki Enokido. This is the traditional piece, Sakura Sakura. Sakura Sakura, one of the best-known pieces from the traditional Japanese repertoire, played on the koto by our World Roots session artist this week, Fuyuki Enokido. We'll be hearing more from her later on in the programme. First, I'm here with Paul Fisher, who is a journalist and broadcaster with a special interest in East Asia, and writer and broadcaster Sue Steward. And we're going to be reviewing some recent world music albums, starting with a new album from the stars of last Thursday night's Late Night Prom here on Radio 3. They were the Congolese band Staff Bender Bilili. So, Sue, tell us about their new album.
Well, I think this band should be the closing act of the Paralympic ceremony next week. These are the wheelchair musicians from Kinshasa, and they came in the wake of the kind of Congolese rumba of Franco and so on, and they never moved into the electro versions that were so popular, and they evolved from it. And this is their new album, Bougez le Monde, Shake the World, which is what they've done, and the track is Mutu Esalaka. We'll be right back.
Kasi bango moko balobaka mutu na bango esalaka Senpati ba mamre ya nzoto mama Mutu esalaka Na bukana makolo zote zali kosenga Misu zali komono bapange Mutu esalaka Na bukana makolo zote zali kosenga Misu zali komono bapange
Mutu Esalaka, The Brains Are Okay, by Staff Benda Bilili from their new album Bougez Le Monde, which is out on Crammed Discs. So that is their second album. The first one was called Très Très Fort. And there we heard the one-string fiddle known as Satonge, which is a total invention of one of the musicians in the band. A very, very interesting sound, very acoustic. Sue, what do you think?
I think it's terrific. And that sound, which is to me sounds a bit like a musical saw, goes all the way through it. And some people I know, it actually grates on them, but I love it. And it's like a thread through with that rhythm, that kind of soukous rhythm going right through it. I think it's a great album. And it is much stronger. If you look at the cover of it, they're wearing snazzy clothes now. They've got shiny shoes. They're in fantastic new wheelchairs. How many years on is it
from the first album, Très Très Fort?
The first album was in 2009. So it's 3 years on.
And they've really become celebrities, haven't they?
They've been touring for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely one of the sort of success stories of African music, aren't they?
Of world music, in fact.
Of world music, definitely.
And as you say, you know, they are almost all of them are in wheelchairs and they... I don't know whether they still do, but I mean, famously, they used to be living in the zoo of Kinshasa, which, so, you know, for
they
them
have,
to have got
have
that far,
now.
They have
yeah.
houses.
Apparently,
now.
Yes, they've made enough money to buy their own houses. Yes.
I'm happy to hear that.
And, you know, there was a controversy, there was a slight sort of rumble from some people that we were being a bit patronising about, but that they the fact that they came so successful and so popular was partly patronising about them. And people were waiting for the next album to come out and waiting to see them live. And then there was no question when you saw them live, that the music was fantastic. This album, if they needed proof, which they didn't, is just proof of that.
Yeah, I mean, if they weren't in wheelchairs at all, it would still be a fantastic album, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
That's not the point of it.
And also, the band's expanded now. It's got more musicians in it, and some of them aren't in wheelchairs. They've got more percussionists and singers.
Yeah, actually, I think I prefer this to the first album. I think it's quite a progression on that first album. It could have been a difficult album to have made, but I think they've definitely pulled it off.
I frankly have a slight problem with the sound of the satonge, which to me is like nails on a blackboard. But, you know, lots of people love it. And of course, it's a wonderful demonstration of creativity faced with lack of resources to have actually made that instrument and then to have learnt to play it. Such a melodic way from scratch.
And I think it's the reason partly it's kept in, apart from that it's an amazing sound, a kind of identity sound, is that it actually reminds people this is what they started out with, making their wheelchairs out of motorbikes, making their guitars out of old thrown away things, and this tin can.
Well, Staff Ben David Lilly's new album, Bouger le Monde, Move the World, is released this month on Crammed Discs. We started the programme by listening to a track, a beautiful track of Koto music from Japan, from our session guest. And Paul, you've brought along something quite different from Japan.
I suppose, yeah, very different. It's an album by a musician from the far north of Japan on the island of Hokkaido. And he's an Ainu musician. And Ainu are, just in the last few years, actually, they've been officially recognised as an indigenous people. And he went down to Okinawa, which is in the far south of Japan. It's about 1,500 miles, apparently, which is about the same distance as Scotland to the south of Spain or something. And it's a long way. It's from the frozen north right down to the subtropical islands of Okinawa. I made an album with a female singer called Misako Oshiro, who's a veteran singer. And the track that we're going to hear is called Ranku Bushi.
Ranku Bushi from the album Kita Tominami. Oki meets Misako Oshiro, music from the north, the far north, and the far south of Japan. And that's out on the label Tough Beats. Wow, fabulous sound. I really, really liked that track. So this singer, Misako Shiro, she's the female voice that we're
Yes, so she's one of the best known, perhaps the best known traditional female singer, veteran female singer on Okinawa.
Was the sort of the main sound in that track, was that traditional Okinawan music?
Yeah, it's a traditional Okinawan tune. I think there are maybe 10 tracks. I think there's perhaps seven or eight tracks are traditional Okinawan tunes, and two or three are Oki's original tunes. They went into a studio in Okinawa. Misako Oshiro did her thing, and then Oki took it back to his studio up in the far north and mixed it, put on different elements. But certainly the base of it is Okinawan music.
It's interesting, Paul. I think one of the things about this is that the fact that you say that the Ainu are now recognised as indigenous people. And I was wondering, I think the Ainu dub record that came out a few years ago was something to do with Oki.
Yeah, that's his record, Oki, Dub Ainu, and then it became a band as well, Dub Ainu Band.
Mm.
But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's been an issue in Japan for years and years, the Ainu, and they were an oppressed people. And I think it was 3 years ago that they finally got recognition that they are an indigenous people.
With their own language, a different language?
With their own language. And what's interesting is that although they're separated by 1,500 miles, Ainu people and Okinawan people who also consider themselves as an indigenous race of Japan, some people who study these things think that they have the same ancestry, the Jomon people, they were called, and it's dated back to sort of 1500 BC.
I really love that track we've just heard as well, I really do. But the other thing I like about this, the other songs we haven't heard, there's a kind of cowboy element to it. There's a sort of rolling cowboy feel, which is kind of bizarre. I think he's kind of one of those eclectic producers who moves into lots of different areas. But the stuff I like really the best on this is the one with it's almost like there's a dub element to it. It's much more spacious. There's the stringed instrument, the voice, and the drum, this important Ainu drum.
Yeah, I mean, Ainu music is very, very spiritual music, and I think that's probably where a lot of that space and dubbiness comes from.
I've remembered the first time I heard of the Ainu was through David Toop, who ran one of the very earliest Radio 3 World Music programmes, and he had records of the Ainu. I remember hearing them, and it was all very, very spare and very mystical and very based in the religion of the Ainu people. This is very interesting. I'm going to follow this up now.
Well, the album featuring Oki with Misako Shiro, called Kita to Minami, is released on the Japanese label Tough Beats. Next, a very different kind of collaboration, Mali and Israel. And I'm talking about the Ture Raihel Collective, Sue.
This is a very interesting collaboration, not just because they were representing two cultures. Idan Raihel was a big fan of Ali Farka Touré, the guitarist, obviously, the late Ali Farka Touré. And his son, Via Farka Touré, was in the airport in Berlin in 2008, and they met. And because of his connection with Ali Farka Touré, he kind of chased him and insisted that he would like to work with him or at least see him in action. And they set up this partnership, and they worked in Tel Aviv in a studio in a kind of improvised three-hour session with other musicians. And this is the result, and it's stunning. And the track we're going to hear is Le Niger.
Thank you.
That was the track Le Niger from the album The Touré Reichel Collective, and it was featuring Idan Reichel on keyboards with Vieux Farka Touré on guitars. Idan Reichel has always been very interested in West African music.
He's a real eclecticist, isn't he? I mean, the kind of music he's putting together in this, and in the past he's done that. I mean, he follows a kind of jazz line, but it isn't really. So everything in this record sees the two of them separately changing slightly in what they normally do. And the Vieux Farka Touré is much more mellowed down and much less rocky and much more sort of less agitated. And absolutely, that's what I like about it in a way, to see how they're kind of coming to each other's levels in a way and doing something. The third thing is just very, very different from each of their individual music.
Paul, what are your feelings on about this album?
It's I enjoyed listening to it. I think it's a late night album. I mean, it was apparently recorded in sort of just over three hours, improvised. And a part of me thinks that's actually what it sounds like. It does sound improvised.
Is that a good thing, you're saying?
Well, on the other hand, you know, they're sort of comparing it to Ali Farka Touré, Ry Cooder's album Talking Timbuktu, and Keith Jarrett's Clone Sessions. I don't think it's actually
of
quite
that caliber.
No, I don't. And I think in 5-10 years' time, I don't think it will be looked at as a groundbreaking record. I think it's a nice record that I might want to play at midnight. But beyond that, I don't think I probably would play it.
What's interesting for me, though, is that recently I found the playing of Vieux Farka Touré extremely what I would call noodly, like very, very, very fast, dexterous playing that isn't going anywhere at all and has absolutely no melody in it, which is the opposite of his father, who was just all melody and virtuosity. But there's something about this project that has kind of slowed him down a bit and kind of forced him to be a bit more melodic.
What I love also is the way he's also bringing in the Malian desert sound, and he goes out onto the bass string and brings that kind of sound, which his father also did, but kind of more like the Tinariwen, but at the same time, again, much more mellowed and kind of reduced down and simplified. I'll just mention the reason I chose that track, apart from liking it a lot, is because Le Niger, the river, was where his family's village and the village farm that Ali Farka Touré led and built up is now destroyed and emptied by the war that's on in the north of Mali. And I just thought that was another reason to introduce it, really.
Well, the Tel Aviv session featuring the Touré Reichel Collective is released on the American label Kumbansha. Well, now to our final album, a band from Ethiopia, although, in fact, they are based not very far from where we are now in central London.
Yeah, they are called Kra Collective, and as you said, they're based here in London. And the album is called Ethiopia Super Kra. The Kra is the Ethiopian lyre. And on this album, there are three different types of lyres which are being played. There's only three people on it, but they make a very big sound. It's rootsy, it's danceable, and I think it's a fantastic album. And the track you're going to listen to is called Wella.
Thank you.
three musicians who call themselves the Krar Collective from Ethiopia, but based in London. The three musicians are Temesgen Zeleke, who plays the Krar, the lyre, Genet Assefa, who sings. I think Temesgen Zeleke also is the voice on that track, and Robel Taye, who plays the Kebero drums. And that's from their album Ethiopia Super Krar, which is out on the World Music Network label. One thing that strikes me listening to this album is that actually it's a very traditional album.
Well, it was recorded live, apparently, straight onto a 24-track reel-to-reel recorder. And it sounds live, and all the better for it, quite frankly.
Mm. And you know, here we've got these three amazing musicians right on our own doorstep who've been here for 9 years playing this music to their own community only. And I think we first came across them on this programme, on World Roots, in 2010, when they came into the van at WOMAD and really rocked the van with their traditional Ethiopian music. So it's great that they're finally coming to light and getting better known.
I mean, you might disagree, actually, but I think sometimes artists who are based in London have a harder time making it than a group who are from Ethiopia. Somehow you don't have the same backstory, the same sort of...
It's almost assumed that the quality is not going to be so good because they're based
or
here.
Or they won't be as authentic or
authentic.
Something.
And the Latin music scene here took years and years to be taken seriously. It was always, oh, well, it's not as good as those in New York.
But it is quite remarkable what you can find. I myself, I've been to see very famous Thai musicians, and I've been like the only, you know, white face there, basically, in the centre of London. Or, you know, a Malaysian, a very famous Malaysian singer singing at the Albert Hall, and I didn't hear anything about it until the album came out. You know, there's...
I saw Lata Mangeshkar in Wembley. I mean, she hardly ever played here, and I was probably the only non-Indian person in the audience. It is fascinating, this whole kind of refugee situation as well, because the number of refugees here who are musicians, and these three are examples of that.
Well, thanks very much to both of you, Paul Fisher and Sue Steward, for joining us. And as ever, you can find full details of all the music played on today's programme on the Radio 3 website. But, Paul, we have something more coming up from you right now, because our session musician that we heard at the beginning of the programme, the koto player Fuyuki Enokido from Japan, came in a couple of weeks ago, and I was out of the country, and so we turn to you, Paul, to step in as our Japan expert. So, Paul, tell us about Fuyuki Enokido.
OK, well, she's a koto player. The koto is a floor zither. She studied from her great aunt, who was a quite a famous koto player, and she came into the studio and played a delightful session.
Well, thank you very much again, Paul and Sue, and now we end with more from the Japanese musician Fuyuki Enokido.
Fuyuki Enokido. That was absolutely beautiful. What was that that you just played?
今の曲は六段の調べ。
The piece I just played now is 六段. It is a traditional koto piece composed by Kengyo Yatsuhashi. It was composed in 17th century. We don't know exactly which year it was composed.I just played in a very authentic way, so this is not my arrangement, but I follow the traditional performance.
And Fuyuki, tell me about the instrument that you play, the koto.
Koto というのは、朝鮮半島。
The instrument called koto came from Korean Peninsula as part of Gagaku music in 17th century and became very popular among Japanese people.And it used 13 string, and with bridge, we do tuning.
And what's very interesting to me about the instrument, I mean, it looks absolutely beautiful. I think I read somewhere that it's meant to resemble a crouching dragon. I don't know if that's true, but what's very interesting about it is that you can get so many different sounds from the instrument by stretching the strings and pushing down on them.You get soft sounds and very percussive sounds.
Koto というのは13弦しかございません。
Well, while a piano has many keys, but the koto has only 13 strings. So in history, the koto player developed many methods like pushing and sliding. So this is the way you can enjoy different sound.But a very famous koto composer and player called Michio Miyagi, he developed 17-string koto, which is bass koto. And quite recently, we have even 20 and 25-string koto.
What about in Japan today? Is it a popular instrument? And do young people study the tradition much?
残念ながら今日本では
Well, I hope a young generation will be interested in koto. But unfortunately, maybe not only in Japan, but traditional Japanese music is in a way decreasing. And younger generation are not very much interested in this kind of music. So I feel, as a koto player, I feel a mission to introduce koto music to the world.
I heard that there are like culture schools in Japan.That teach maybe ikebana, flower arranging, and at the same time koto. And these are quite popular, especially the koto is quite popular, especially for young women to learn because it looks good if they want to maybe find a partner in the future. Is that still the case?
非常に、興味深い、質問なんですけれども。
The overall population of koto who's playing or practicing now is about 100,000 people. So I think it's still a very small number compared to the number of the population in Japan. Well, actually, your question is very interesting because I was at a hotel in Shinagawa in Tokyo playing koto. And then a man, maybe in his 40s, came.To me and ask the question, well, this is a beautiful sound. And what is this instrument called? And I replied, this is called koto. And he was very much surprised and then asked when the instrument's coming from. And I said, this is a Japanese instrument. So I was so surprised that even Japanese people don't know anything about this instrument.
And what about yourself, Fuyuki? Who did you study the koto from?
My great aunt was a professor of the music school in Japan, and she was my teacher.
And I believe that the last tune you're going to play for us, you're singing. What are some of the words?
天の恵みという曲は
Well, I composed Grace of Heaven inspired by my great aunt who died last year.I was very much shocked and very sad. And at the beginning of the music, I'm crying. And then suddenly my great aunt is standing in front of me and tells me, Fuyuki, don't cry. You have to move on. Then I realized that she was such a very hardworking and positive lady. She was practicing koto very, very hard so that her finger bent 45 degree angle. And then I really thought that I should follow her and I should move on. And at the end of this music, I start to play again very bravely.
And in Japanese, it's called?
Ama no Megumi.
Okay, thank you very much, Fuyuki Enokido.
Thank you very much.
Music on the Koto from Fuyuki Enokido, ending World Roots with Lucy Duran. Now on Radio 3, Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
Welcome. Let's open today's show with the exciting pianism of an artist who can effectively utilize his trio to evoke an indie rock sensibility. See if you can guess who this is. Did you guess? Yes, that was the trio of pianist Neil Cowley and his Nibs from the album Loud Louder Stop. Before fully committing to his own band, he was regularly making contributions as both pianist and producer in the commercial arena, and he regularly plays with the likes of pop sensation Adele. But if you want to hear Neil and the guys, they'll be performing at this year's London Jazz Festival, which kicks off in November. He'll be featured with 30 strings from Goldsmiths College, which Jazz Lineup will record. But if you can't wait till then, the Neil Cowley Trio headlined the Isla Jazz Festival this month at the Lagavulin Distillery. The festival runs from the 14th to the 16th of September and features Miriam Aida with Mario Caribe's jazz bossa, saxophonist Julian Arguiles and trumpeter Colin Steele. Check the Jazz Lineup website for more information. Staying with performers at Isla, vocalist Victoria Tolstoy featured last year and was accompanied by pianist Jakob Karlsson, who has a new album out. Karlsson is a star in his native Sweden, named Musician of the Year in 2010 by Swedish Radio's annual Jazz Critics poll. His music reminds me of a personal evolution of the classic Pat Metheny group, mixed in with an admiration for Keith Jarrett. His soloing reveals a reverence for the Herbie Hancock style, but with a hint of what must be a personal Swedish-Scandinavian identity. The album is entitled More. It showcases a pianist of class and maturity. This is Nila. Nila from pianist Jakob Carlsen, with Hans Andersen on bass and Jonas Holgersen on the drums. The album is called More, and it reveals a musician of depth searching for his own territory and building on a love for classic fusion and the contemporary trio language laid down by countrymen EST, Brad Meldow, and jazz giant Keith Jarrett. More is out now on the ACT label. While sticking with the piano, Brad Meldow makes an appearance on the new Elie de Gibry album. Who is Elie de Gibry, I hear you ask? Well, I first heard the saxophonist at the Fairfield Halls about 10 years ago, playing alongside trumpeter Eddie Henderson in the Herbie Hancock Band. Quite a baptism of fire that, as a whole, I remember enjoying. His latest CD could also be regarded as a gathering of heavyweights, with Ron Carter on bass and Al Foster on the drums, completing the heavyweight quartet. This is the opening track, and a beautiful composition from the pianist, Unrequited.